counsel for the next case are here, you can approach. And while you're getting ready, I'll call our last case on the calendar this morning, case number A24-0467, CSN Bonaventure Limited Partnership versus Fun Eats and Drinks. Good morning, counsel. As I am sure you both know, you will each be given 15 minutes for your primary argument today, and appellant, you'll be given 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before beginning your argument, please feel free to adjust the podium to a height that you are comfortable, and please identify yourself and your client for the audio record before beginning your argument. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you're ready.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. May it please the court, my name is Kirby Graff, and with me today is Charlotte James, and we represent appellant Fun Eats and Drinks, LLC, in this matter. This is a case about a settlement agreement requiring judicial approval that did not receive judicial approval. This court must grapple with the fact that there is no evidence before it demonstrating explicit judicial approval of a settlement agreement. I bring this appeal on behalf of my client to recognize that very fact. Our client, Fun Eats and Drinks, I will shorten to Fun Eats, is a Wyoming limited liability company with its principal place of business in California. Its business is restaurants. They owned and operated restaurants throughout the country. This includes the former Champs restaurant in Minnetonka. The Champs restaurant was leased from space owned by the respondent until the restaurant closed during the COVID-19 pandemic. Prior to the restaurant closing, respondent brought the current action seeking damage for rent, repairs, and other costs.
We're familiar with the facts in this. I mean, you had 3 years of protracted litigation. So you end up having this negotiated agreement. And the negotiated agreement takes care of Minnesota, takes care of California and the trust folks there. And the agreement is you have a receiver. The receiver is going to administer to all of the funds. And the agreement that ended up resulting said that all of the acts of the receiver are approved. So why is that not an agreement from start to finish that would be enforceable in Minnesota?
Well, Your Honor, the language does say in the September 6th, 2003 order, which I'll call the September 6th, 2023 order, that all acts of the receiver are approved. The same day on September 6th, the...
At that point, it would have been enforceable. You have a stipulation, you have an agreement. All acts are going to be agreed upon.
Agreed, Your Honor. But I would say that there is a minute order in the record in California that issued the same day, September 6th, that specifically states the application for approval of the settlement agreement is withdrawn. Now, in California, the case law states specifically that if a minute order is issued by a court and it doesn't specifically state that it will be another formal order or another written order will be issued, that the written minute order, as presented in the court minutes, is a binding and formal court order.
Well,
so there is a binding...
You know, whether it's California or Minnesota, you have something as presented to the court to issue its order on, and it's pending. And just because the parties may say, well, we have a deal... I mean, if you're coming to the appeals court and absent the formality of all, the parties all being in agreement to forego the litigation, it's still open and allows for the judges to enter an order in conformity.
I mean, yes, Your Honor, and the judge can issue an order in conformity, and it says all acts of the receiver. One of the very last acts of the receiver was to withdraw the pending motion. In fact, the two competing court orders here, the minute order and the September 6th order, are the only things that are really controlling. But however, the problem comes in, and the reason for this appeal, is that the minute order is the only thing that specifically references the settlement agreement. The actual September 6th order and the stipulation it's based upon do not include any reference to the settlement agreement. If someone pulled it off the street, they would not be able to tell that it was involving the settlement agreement.
Isn't there another order that's important, and that's the original California order from April appointing the receiver and, in fact, authorizing the receiver to do what they did here, and that is to enter into a settlement in the Minnesota litigation. Do you agree that's also an important order in the case?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. This is the April 18th.
Given the fact that that order authorized the receiver to do what they did here, and that is settle the Minnesota case, whether that settlement is presented by the receiver in a standalone request for approval or as part of the final resolution of all of the matters involving the receiver, which is reflected in the September 5th, 2023 stipulation. Why does it matter whether the approval for the settlement of the Minnesota case is ordered in the September 6th order, broad order, or in some other order? What difference does it make?
The April 18th, 2023 order that you referenced states any settlement that the court and the receiver have authority to settle any settlement of such litigation is subject to approval by the court. So even if the receiver did strike a deal, the April 18th order requires it to be approved by the court
in
California.
And why isn't the September 6th order that's premised on this broad stipulation that exactly the approval order that the settlement requires?
Because at that time, when the court issued the close of the receivership on September 6th, the motion before it for the approval of settlement agreement had been withdrawn. The language in the minute order specifically states that the ex parte application for the approval of a settlement agreement was withdrawn.
And why wouldn't we read that to say it was withdrawn as unnecessary? Because we have a stipulated order that is going to go before the court to more broadly resolve everything that the receiver was handling.
Your Honor, the record is bereft of any references to the settlement agreement and why things were done the way they were done. But by doing that, by ignoring a formal court order, which is the minute order, it is weighing the evidence. In this case, evidentiary hearing is needed if there's genuine issues of material fact. And here there is. There's two competing orders, one that says the motion's withdrawn, and the case law supports the fact that a withdrawn motion is treated as if it had never happened. Has it never been part of the record?
Here's my question, counsel. So under California law, let's say the motion for approval of the settlement agreement had never been filed with the court. Mm-hmm. And then this order came to the court that said everything the receiver did was approved. Would that be in compliance with the court's obligation to approve the settlement agreement, or does California law require the court to actually look at and review the settlement agreement prior to approval?
I would say the short answer is, Your Honor, is the settlement agreement between the parties in Minnesota specifically states that the receiver is required to bring the motion in California. And they did that. But the receivership was resolved before the actual motion could be approved, and the motion was withdrawn. Now, to answer your question about what California...
Ship, in its basic form, was designed to gather and take care of the assets on behalf of the trust, and the other part of the receivership was simply fostering an agreement that there'd be a judgment in Minnesota for whatever the amount was in favor of the respondent. So my question to you is, you argue to the court that if a party is withdrawing a pending motion for certain relief, which is the receiver and all the busybody stuff the receiver is doing in California, why does that negate the agreement that was reached by the receiver on behalf of your party with the Minnesota group? You have no authority that says that these have to be treated as one.
Your Honor, I would say that, to answer that, the authority is in that when you operate the contract, right, the contract's on its face may be not ambiguous. The terms are pretty clear in the settlement agreement that it must be approved by the Superior Court of California. It mentions it multiple times, including in one of the...
But wouldn't I then say that your motion to terminate the receiver did not say and withdraw from the deal that was reached with the Minnesota people?
All I know,
to me, it seems like there are two related things. You have the busybody receiver stuff and agreement there's going to be a judgment and let's get rid of the receiver. We stipulate don't need him anymore, but I don't see why one can't be enforced.
Well, Your Honor, it could be enforced, but the fact is we need an evidentiary hearing at a minimum to determine that.
To determine what?
To determine the scope of the all acts of the receiver as they're stated in the September 6th order. Because if you include all acts of the receiver,
To determine if there was an agreement, though. I mean, isn't...
No, there's no dispute that there is a settlement agreement in Minnesota. There's no dispute that the parties settled their receivership in California. What the evidentiary hearing is needed is what is the scope of the minute order? What does it mean? What does withdrawal of the motion mean? By case law, and if you follow the law in California, the withdrawal of a motion is the minute order is a formal court order, and we can't ignore that. I mean, Section 599.04 of Minnesota statute says this court cannot ignore statutory law and law from other states.
So here's my question. So if the minute order had not been filed, would you concede that the order of the court approved that motion?
I would concede.
So you have, right, so you have the, I know there's different words, petition, is that the word? So you have the petition that was pending. If then you had just had this order that said everything the receiver did is approved, because that motion was still pending, is it, do you concede that that would have been enough to constitute approval of the settlement agreement under the terms of the contract?
I would, to a point, Your Honor. I would concede that, yes, all acts means all acts. But in this case, I'll go back to
it. And so coming back to my original question, it isn't your position. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding your position. It isn't your position that the California court needed to do some separate kind of analysis of the settlement agreement to approve it, outside of just approving the acts of the receiver.
My position is, Your Honor, is that there was a pending motion that needed to be approved, the settlement agreement. There needed to be a finding that the settlement agreement is approved. The April 18th order says that the court approval of settlement agreements is the jurisdiction of the Superior Court of California. The settlement agreement requires a court order approving the settlement agreement. And so if we have a court order saying that the settlement agreement wasn't before the court anymore, and we have a court order saying it approved all acts, it also has to approve the act of removing and withdrawing that motion.
So what would an evidentiary hearing look like? You're going to call the judge to say what he or she meant? Or I'm not sure what... It seems like you're making legal arguments more than fact-based arguments. What would happen at an evidentiary hearing if we agree with you and reverse and remand?
The evidentiary hearing, Your Honor, would first go back in front of Judge Yonish, would be my guess. And in this case, we would call witnesses to speak to what was the terms of the settlement agreement, did they mean to include, probably including the receiver himself, to ask the questions of whether or not this settlement agreement included, the resolution of the receivership included resolving and approving the settlement agreement in Minnesota.
Well, you could also call the attorney who withdrew the, who filed the withdrawal motion as to what their reasoning was for withdrawal.
That is correct.
In which case you could get the answer, well, I withdrew it because this other order encompassed everything.
And it definitely could be as simple as that, Your Honor, but we haven't been given the opportunity to make that argument. The VoiceStream case, I believe, specifically states that if material facts are disputed, an evidentiary hearing is required. It also states that enforcement of a settlement agreement requires a hearing if issues are sharply conflicting and there are questions of fact for the fact finder to decide. In this case, there is a fact to decide. Now, we would also argue that, you know, part of our relief is one.
But does the intent of the lawyer in withdrawing that, here's what I'm wrestling with, is whether these are legal questions or factual questions. Does the intent of the lawyer in withdrawing, in filing that withdrawal motion matter for the purposes of whether that order was sufficient to approve the settlement agreement as a matter of law?
I think, yes, the intent matters. I mean, our Minnesota counsel for Fun Eats was not involved in the resolution of the California court case. We simply assisted with the settlement agreement here in Minnesota. So the intent of the lawyer...
Again, you're saying the California court case. And, the judge here in Minnesota repeats, there's no dispute the receiver had the authority to act, enter into a settlement. Settlement was reached. That was done. You call the court and say, no trial. We have a settlement. And then the California action is where you want the receiver withdrawn. I just don't see why there is anything to resolve in Minnesota?
Your Honor, the settlement agreement is clear. Yes.
What was the receiver, what responsibility did the receiver have after he, I think it was he, after he reached this dollar judgment settlement, which resolved the Minnesota matter, when you called the judge and say, no trial, we've got an agreement? What else was the receiver to do? He'd completed his action.
The receiver's task in the settlement agreement, and when we is that they were required to put forth the motion in front of the court in California.
It's for the California action.
That is correct, Your Honor. But the Minnesota action was only resolved on contingent on a condition precedent on the being approved in California. And we don't have that here. There is no document that respondent can point to that says specifically this settlement agreement was approved. And that's the whole point of why
we construe that against your client for failing to distinguish between the two causes of action. I mean, these are separate proceedings. You've got the California stuff, you have the Minnesota stuff. So doesn't that burden fall on you?
I don't think the burden does fall on us, Your Honor, in the sense that it is clear from the settlement agreement it needs court approval, and we don't have it. We only have approval of all acts, and that in all acts would include all acts receiver, including withdrawal of the motion. I only have a couple.
Wouldn't you still, this just arguably, and I, may I ask my question?
Yes.
Thank you, we're out of time. So even if the California court had approved it, you would still have to come back to Minnesota to have the Minnesota court approve it. I mean, the California court has no bearing on what happens here.
May I answer?
Yes.
Thank you. In the settlement agreement in Minnesota, there is a stipulation for judgment in the amount that the parties agreed to. Included in there is a line that specifically states, on this date, the California court authorized and approved the settlement agreement. That is to be filed with the court following the approval of the settlement in California. That never happened. We can't fill that agreement out. There is no specific approval of the California courts, or excuse me, the settlement agreement in California. Thank you, Your Honors.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent. I do wish it moved faster.
May it please the court. My name is Taylor Steiner, and I represent respondent CSM Bonadventure Limited Partnership. I think the court had a lot of good questions here, and I want to address each of them to the extent I wrote them down correctly. First of all, the withdrawal and then the subsequent order that was issued after the withdrawal. First of all, the order that was issued stated facts. It did not rule on the motion. It did not say the motion, I'm not going to consider it as part of the next thing that was also presented to me. It just stated facts, motion withdrawn. Secondly,
you don't disagree with appellant that the case, that's different in California than it is, that the implications of that seem to be somewhat different in California than they are in Minnesota.
The implications are that it could be construed as a court order. It's a minute order. That's the name of it. At the same time, there's no order in there. It states facts. If you read the text of that order, it says the motion has been withdrawn. There's no ruling on the application. And the withdrawal.
Why should we construe that as a withdrawal of any request to approve this Minnesota settlement?
You shouldn't construe it as a
Why not?
Because the motion or the application was essentially unnecessary. They submitted an alternative document, the stipulation, that requested the same relief. It's the same as if a party comes to trial. They argue 5 days of trial, and then at the last minute they say, I'm sorry, Judge, we've settled. Can you just approve this settlement agreement? They're asking for the same thing in just in an alternative manner. And in this case, all that was required was an order approving of the settlement agreement, and that's what we had here.
And you argue that the more robust September 6th order was such a document that it just, because it broadly approved of all the receiver's actions.
It did broadly approve, and Your Honor, it's okay that the language in the order was broad. There's nothing in the settlement agreement from Minnesota that requires any specific language, any specific reference to the settlement agreement.
But here's my question. Does the settlement agreement require some kind of indication that the district court actually reviewed the settlement agreement? And this is where I'm getting hung up, if I'm being honest. So The settlement agreement says you have to have a petition before the California court and that the California court has to approve it, which would indicate that the settlement agreement needs to be actually before the California court, and they need to look at it and say, yes, this is in the best interest of the parties to enter into this settlement agreement. Is it in compliance with the terms of the settlement agreement for it then to get that petition to get removed, which is required by the plain terms of the settlement agreement itself, and then for it to get encompassed into this all acts of the receiver when it's not even clear that the settlement agreement is before, like that the language of the settlement agreement is before the court at the time it makes that decision?
Sure. I think if you read the language of the settlement agreement, it doesn't say that the court needs to approve the petition or the application. It says the receiver needs to make an application, and approval of the settlement agreement is what the court needs to approve. And there's no specific requirements about what that order must look like. And in addition, I think in submitting the stipulation, the court does have everything the receiver did in front of it. The court is tasked with overseeing every action of the receiver.
So do we have in the record that separate from the petition itself, the California court, when it had the other motion, actually had the settlement agreement in front of it to approve?
The court did have the settlement agreement in front of it. First of all, the receiver made an ex parte motion. They had a hearing on that ex parte motion, and the judge said, oh, I didn't mean to make it ex parte. Let's give the other side a little more time to respond. So the court looked at it first, and it looked at it again in preparation for the hearing that was going to happen on the day that it issued both orders.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
And
there was not a hearing ultimately because the stipulation was filed, or was there a hearing during which the stipulation was presented to the district court?
It's not clear whether there was a hearing or not. It seems like everything was all done at the same time. Withdraw the motion, or judge, hey, we've settled, withdraw the motion, here's our settlement agreement, please sign it. Or here's our stipulation, please sign it. I want to be clear with the language I'm using.
But we don't have a transcript or really a good understanding of exactly how it was presented.
There's no transcript, Your Honor.
Do you disagree that if there was a hearing and the lawyer was called in and he said, oh, I withdrew it because the Minnesota settlement agreement was not part of this, that would be legally binding in any way? Or do you think that this is a case that can be decided as a matter of law? And I'm trying to tease out, like, is that a fact question or is that a question of law?
It can be decided as a matter of law because the documents, which is what the court's focus should be, are unambiguous and clear. There's no ambiguity in what they say.
But is there ambiguity in terms of what the intent was in withdrawing the... Is it petition?
Application.
Sorry, application. I'm sorry. I keep confusing the California. But yeah. Is ambiguity created because of that minute order and the difference in California law with regard to the minute order?
No, ambiguity is not created. First of all, the receiver and counsel for Fun Eats appellant drafted the settlement agreement and also drafted the stipulation and also drafted the proposed order by the court. So first of all, this answers another question, but those documents should be construed against the drafter of each one of those. And there's no ambiguity created between those because the language is very clear. An intent does not come into play. Parties are supposed to put their intent on the paper, and that's what they did in this case. They said all actions of the receiver and all transactions of the receiver, all acts, transactions, and actions of the receiver are approved. And then they submitted it to the court and said, please approve this, and that's what the court did. So there's no ambiguity here. This court can look at the three documents at issue, the settlement agreement, the stipulation, and the court's subsequent order, can conclude that they're all clear and unambiguous. As counsel has actually admitted that they're clear, all means all, I think is what he said. The court can look at those documents and decide this case as a matter of law. There's no need for an evidentiary hearing. And I might admit, the court does consider motions for settlement agreements as summary judgment. They could have submitted an affidavit of the attorney who did this or of the receiver in support of our or in opposition of our motion. They didn't do that. They don't get a second time to do that. A summary judgment, which is what essentially this was, allows the submission of affidavits. we submitted affidavits, including all of the orders. They submitted nothing in response. And so the court asked about what an evidentiary hearing would look like. First of all, the Minnesota court has no jurisdiction over any of the witnesses. I don't know if we can subpoena them to get here. I would, in theory, think we'd have to subpoena the judge of the California court, which I would never want to do. I don't know that it would be even be allowed. And so I don't think that's even a possibility here. I want to be clear, too.
But wouldn't that be true in any... I mean, maybe not. I guess I'm trying to see how you get evidentiary hearings in cases that are trying to enforce settlement agreements from out-of-state jurisdictions. And because we do construe these as summary judgment, it does seem like those are hurdles that are faced in many, many cases that are coming under this rule and under this procedure.
Sure. The easiest hurdle that could have and should have potentially been done would be offer affidavits from those folks. And we don't have any of those. And, you know, they had the chance. I don't think they get a second chance to do that. Nor is there any indication that any of these folks would be willing to submit such an affidavit. I don't know if they were asked or not. And so I just want to be clear that counsel in its brief used the words diametrically opposed, that the action of withdrawing the application is diametrically opposed with then asking for all acts to be approved. And I want to be clear that the withdrawal of the motion is consistent with then submitting a stipulation saying everything else is approved, because it makes that motion unnecessary. Judge, we've decided everything. You don't need to worry about this one specific issue. Here's a resolution on everything. Those actions are consistent and not diametrically opposed. Honestly, Your Honor, I don't have much further unless there's any other questions. I'd be happy to answer.
I do have a question. You all had also asked for alternative relief under a different theory. It wasn't addressed by the district court in Minnesota. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, Your Honor.
We can look at other theories that you presented.
Sure. The alternative relief essentially is saying that appellant should be stopped from arguing that the condition precedent didn't occur because it had a hand in making that condition precedent not occur. It knew this motion was pending, or application was pending before the California court. It went and hurried and settled with the secured lender, which we believe is a related party, and maybe intentionally asked the court not to rule on the motion, thinking that they could pull a fast one over on us in Minnesota, thinking we had a settlement agreement. We canceled the trial based on that representation, but... we didn't resolve it.
So an estoppel theory based on unclean hands or bringing into existence what we're looking at now?
Yeah, the case law basically talks about if the failure of the condition precedent is caused by the party who wants to get out of the agreement, you can look past it.
That's all I had.
Any other questions?
I see no other questions.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and it would be helpful to me if you would respond to respondent's argument regarding the lack of affidavits or the opportunity at summary judgment to submit some evidence to create a material fact issue.
Of course, Your Honor. May it please the court, thank you for the rebuttal time. To answer your first question is that I don't think we need to submit affidavits as part of the, it's a motion to enforce a settlement agreement. In this case, yes, it could have been done and it wasn't done, and I won't state that the record states otherwise. But the standard invoice stream and the other cases cited says that if there is a material fact in dispute, which the minute order in California creates, then an evidentiary hearing is necessary. All the questions that could be answered.
You aver that the minute order, that's your argument that it creates a question of fact. So don't you need to have something that supports why it's a question of fact?
I think we do, Your Honor, in the sense that the minute order specifically states the motion or the application was withdrawn. It's clear as day. It says it in there that the ex parte application is withdrawn and they're discussing the motion. Now, one of the questions asked earlier was there any ambiguity created within the contract? In the settlement agreement. I will note that the settlement agreement contains a clause that it's not to be construed against either party, that either party has the right, I think it's Section 18 in the settlement agreement. So there can be no sort of weight against appellant as opposed to respondent in the terms of the agreement. Now, the question asked by Your Honor regarding is there an ambiguity in the way that the process was to go in California. The settlement agreement specifically states that after approval of the agreement, within 30 days, the receiver is required to file a motion in California for court approval, and that court approval is to be in a form in a court order. Okay, there is no court order approving this particular item. And I will harp on the fact that if it's approving all acts of the receiver, that would include all acts, including withdrawing the motion. And there should be an evidentiary hearing, and how that comes to be is something.
But the act of withdrawing a motion is not the same as the act of repudiating the settlement agreement. You seem to conflate those. I mean, the receiver still settled the case. And even if the standalone motion to approve is withdrawn because there's a broader approval motion before the court, there's no evidence that the receiver repudiated the settlement.
You're correct, Your Honor. The record does not show that the receiver said that the settlement agreement is no longer valid. However, I will state that the receiver's authority was removed by the resolution of the California action, and the effective withdrawal, as cited by our case law in our brief, states that the effective withdrawal is this, if the motion had never happened. So really what's happening is the motion is not before the court when it issues its final order approving all acts of the receiver. So it can't approve the settlement agreement in Minnesota. And then, you know, one last note I will have here, Your Honor, is that there's a weighing of facts here. The court and the respondent's argument is saying that the approval of all acts has so much value, and then the minute order has no value. Well, in California, it's a formal court order that there has to be assigned some value of the withdrawal, and we don't have the facts in the record, and that's why an evidentiary hearing is necessary to determine what that meant. And that's why we're here. So I respectfully request, before I close, but is there any other questions for me?
I don't see any.
Okay, thank you. We respectfully request this court remand. I did remember one thing, that with regard to the supplemental argument of respondent on the failure or frustration of a condition precedent, I do believe it's cited in our brief that this court has the authority for an issue not decided by the district court to remand it to make findings on that issue. Now, I realize this is a de novo review, and the court can do as it pleases, but there is case law that states that if there is a question regarding frustration of a condition precedent, it can be remanded for additional findings on that fact. With that, Your Honors, I ask that the court reverse the decision of the district court and set this matter for trial, or in the alternative, reverse the decision of the district court and set this for an evidentiary hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel in this matter. This case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in this matter within the time prescribed by statute. That ends our oral calendar this morning, and we will adjourn to confer on our cases.
Thank you.